welcome to another episode 4 of Topics in Endurance Sports. I'm your host, Tim. Today is Monday, March 20th, 2017. And I meant to record this last week, so it would be a St. Patrick's Day episode. But I am 3 days behind on that, which is probably pretty much always going to be the case with me. In recording these, I'll always be a little behind what I plan to do. What are you going to do about it? Anyway, thanks to Techno Axe for the music. The song was called Irish Tin Whistle. Techno Axe, TEKNOAXE. And they can be found at ReverbNation.com/TechnoAxe. They gave me permission to play that little Irish song there, and I'll play the rest of it at the end of the show. You can find more about me at my website at runsmith.net. Runsmith.net. You can find my email, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and also about my coaching services at that page. Today's main topic is the 100 Ks of Convenience, a race that I did last weekend, not just 2 days ago, but 9 days ago. That's what I'll be talking about today, mainly. Just a few things from last time. I talked about the Black Mountain Marathon and Mount Mitchell Challenge last time that I did in Black Mountain, North Carolina. Really cool race. Check out that episode. That was episode 3. And I really encourage people to look into that race if you want to do something unique. Run up a mountain and run back down a mountain. I forgot to mention my hotel was actually not in Black Mountain. It was in Asheville, which is only like 20 minutes away from Black Mountain. That's also where I ate at the Lucky Otter restaurant. I mentioned that, where I had the burrito and the beer. That was in Asheville. I also know there's a number of other good races in the area that you should check out. There's one called the Quest for the Crest 50K 10K in May. It's put on by Run Bum. This is a Sean Blanton is the owner of Run Bum, and he puts on a number of races. For example, the Georgia Death Race, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. One lady I interviewed said she was going to do the Shut In Ridge Run. That's also in Asheville in November. It's an 18-mile run. And I did a quick search at one website, and I found over a dozen races within 50 miles of Asheville. So check that area out. Asheville seems like it might be a cool little town based on what I saw of it. So I think it's a place for everyone to check out that area. You got a mountain and just, well, you've got mountains, right? You're not too far from the Appalachian Trail. Speaking of which, I also forgot to mention that the day after I did the race, I did a hike on the Big Creek Trail, which is on the border of North Carolina and Tennessee, which is actually near the Appalachian Trail. So I wasn't on it, but I was close to it. I did a hike that was 11 miles, so 5.5 miles out, 5.5 miles back, along this creek. It was really nice and peaceful, really good way to recover after a race. If I had gotten out there earlier and thought about it, I could have done a loop that would have actually included about 5 miles or something of the Appalachian Trail. So I'm kind of obsessed with the Appalachian Trail and that I really want to hike it or hike more of it. I've done a whole 8 miles of it so far since I've moved to Ohio, but I really want to get into hiking and backpacking and try to do a lot of the Appalachian Trail. I don't know if I want to do the whole thing or anything like that, but at least lots of it. So, more reason to check out that area. I also made a mistake. I was talking about Camille Herron, about how she got a golden ticket to the Western States 100-mile endurance run. And I said that she won a race called the Bandera 100K in Texas. She actually got second place. The winner was Stephanie Howe Violet got first place, but both of those got a golden ticket. So the top two at these golden ticket races get entry into the Western States run. If that doesn't make sense, you need to go back and listen to previous episodes, what I'm talking about there. Also, I talked about the very first triathlon, and the whole point of it was, you know, when was it and what was that about? And then I forgot to actually know the year it was. It was actually September 25th, 1974 was the day of the very first triathlon that ever happened. I think I guessed 73, then I guessed 75. It was actually 74. Okay, so that's enough for last time. Let's get into today's main topic, 100 Ks of Convenience. So in the last show, I said that I was going to take a little break from doing some races. I had no races for about a month and a half. Well, I lied because I did this race. And the reason is, although I'm in Ohio, my family is my mom, my sister, a bunch of nieces and nephews are all in Davenport, Iowa. That's where I grew up. And my daughter's in Iowa City, Iowa. So I go back there often to visit. And I was heading back that weekend and I just saw there was a race put on by a friend of mine. And I've done a couple of their races already. So I said, what the heck, I'll jump in. It was only $40, even though I entered only 5 days before the race. It was still only $40. So I thought, I'll give it a try. It was their first year putting this race on. It's a pretty unique race that they did. And we'll talk more about the races they put on. They put on pretty interesting, good races. So this race was all on road. It was, you could do either one, two, or three 21-mile loops. So if you did three of them, that would be about 63 miles. That's a little over 100 kilometers. So that's why it's called 100 Ks of Convenience. I only did one loop because it was kind of a last-second thing, and I usually don't run on road that much. So I only did 21 miles is all I did, the one loop. About a half dozen people did two loops, and only three people did the three loops. He just threw this together, this race, and he had a cap of like 40 people, and he actually did sell out. So I think high 30s is how many people actually did the race. So there's like 20 people who did the one loop. The people who did two and three loops started at 6 a.m. I started at 9 a.m. since I was just doing one loop. That's when we started. The day was really nice, cool. It was in the low to mid-20s all day, which was actually very nice, but it was kind of a shock in that Thursday evening before, it was in the 60s when I went for a run. So it dropped from the mid-60s to the low 20s in about 36 hours, but it was okay. It was still a very nice day. Like I said, the race is all on pavement. It's a 21-mile loop on pavement, on just streets and some on the bike path in town. Not super hilly. There were a few little hills here and there that you had to generally probably going to walk up or slowly jog up. Some hills, but not like mountains or anything like that. What made this unique was instead of aid stations, you had to go into three different convenience stores along the way and you had to buy something. What he gave you when you registered, when you came to Packet Pickup, he gave you a little card, a little prepaid like credit card thing, and that's what you use. So you didn't use any of your own money for this. He gave every single runner a card. So you got a card, you'd go into the first convenience store, you had to buy something, and you had to save the receipt. That was your proof that you made it to that convenience store. So really cool little thing. So we ran about roughly 6 to 7 miles between convenience stores. So ran about 6 to 7 to the first one. I bought Bugles. I discovered Bugles are my new favorite race food. Absolutely awesome. I thought I was going to get some potato chips because I often like potato chips in races just for the salt. But I couldn't find a small enough bag, so I got a little bag of Bugles. Man, those things are good. Those things were wonderful. I actually carried the bag with me for the whole race. So I got a little bag of Bugles at the first convenience store. The second convenience store I can't even remember now. I think I got a banana at the second convenience store, maybe something like that. And that was at the like 10 miles out. So that was at the farthest place out from where we started the run. And then the third convenience store, I got like some M&Ms or something. I didn't even eat those. I actually just carried them with me. I think I got M&Ms and like a little protein bar or something. So my prepaid card had $10 on it, which I only used like $6, $7 of it. So I'm guessing if you did more loops, your prepaid card had more money on it, but I never did ask on that. But I would assume that would be the case. So even though I paid $40, I got $10 worth of stuff I could buy. So that comes, some of the money comes back to you. So then when I was done, I had the three receipts, and then you have to show the three receipts, and that's proof that you are done. And he actually could use those receipts as escaping me the phrase, your splits, for your splits. So you could say, well, you're at mile seven at such and such a time because there's a time on the receipt. I don't know if he did this or not, but he was talking about doing that, posting those results along with just the how long it took you results. So it was really a neat idea to do this. And I have an interview with the race directors, and they tell you about how they came up with this idea. So let's see. As far as my race goes, it took me 3 hours, 51 minutes, and 31 seconds, 3:51:31, to run the 21 miles. My legs actually felt horrible. And I've kind of got an IT band thing and something with my knees that happen, but only seem to happen if I run on pavement. It's kind of good news because the races I enter are generally on trails, but if I run on trails, I don't seem to have any issues. But if I'm run on pavement and I just keep going, my IT band acts up and kind of bugs my knees a little bit. And I think it's just something to do with the very repetitive nature of running on road as opposed to trail. No two steps are the same. I mean, you're constantly jostling back and forth and up and down and walking and then running and changing your stride length and all that, and I don't seem to have any issues. So it, on the other hand, maybe the reason I was feeling, the other thing I guess I do on pavement is I run faster. That's the other thing. On trails, I'm running generally slower, and pavement, I'm running faster, and maybe I was pushing myself more than I thought, because I actually ended up 6th of 24. And I actually, honestly, when I was running, I was thinking I was way at the back. I had no idea where I was. And so I thought I was way at the back of the pack, and I ended up in 6th place. So maybe I was just pushing it hard. Maybe that's all it was. But I didn't feel like it. I felt like I was just barely jogging. But maybe I was pushing it harder than I thought. One thing, although, and you'll hear some people I interviewed mention this, you got a map. So, and you didn't get the map till the morning of the race. So you actually didn't know where you were going till the morning of the race. Also a little bit unique. But he did give a map, and on one side was a map, and the other side was turn-by-turn directions. So you could go that way. But you actually did not have to follow the map. Now, the map was going to be pretty much the fastest way, but you did not have to follow. You can go whatever way you want. And being that this was my hometown, I actually did not at first. I took a different way to the first convenience store that probably made it slightly longer and a little more hilly, but it put me on a bike path. And I didn't have to go through a bunch of light stoplights. So you could do that if you wanted. Some people, of course, weren't from the area, and they had no choice but to follow the map. But I was able to kind of do a different way at the beginning there, and I actually ran by the house that I grew up in, which was not that exciting, but just for fun, I did that. That was something I could do. So you didn't have to follow the map, and you could go a little different way. So that was kind of fun. Let's see, what else about the race? That's all I can really think of about the race. Let's see, let's go with the winners of the race. For the 20-mile, the one-lap race, the winner was, the male winner was Devin Albaugh. He did it in 2 hours, 33 minutes, and 12 seconds. He took off like a cannon. He just started flying when he started running, like he was doing a marathon training or something, because he was really flying. So you can see he beat me by almost an hour and a half. So he was flying. The first woman was Krista Bunting, 3:24:51. For the 40-mile, the overall winner was Wendy Foote, 7 hours, 50 minutes, and 1 second. The first male was Mitchell Elliott and Mad Dog Dillon. Looks like they came in together at 8:49:08. I interviewed all three of those, all three of the 40-mile winners I interviewed. So great job, Wendy Foote, overall winner, 7:50. That's going really well for 40 miles, actually 42 miles. And the 100K winner was Brent Feigl, It took him 11 hours, 9 minutes, and 53 seconds. Yes, 11 hours. Like I said, there's only three guys who did the 100K. They all did finish. So great job to them. That's a lot of running on road, 63 miles. As far as what you got for the race, we got a black sweatshirt. I always like sweatshirts that said 100Ks of convenience on it. And also, the people who did the 40 mile and the 100K, they got special awards when they finished. I did not get one just doing one loop, but the awards for the 40 mile and 100K are so cool, I kind of want to go back next year, assuming they do it again, and do the 40 mile just to get one of these block awards. And what it was a cement block, and one of the race directors actually made them. I'll post a picture of these on the website. They're really cool. It's like, and he just figured out how to do it himself. It's a little cube made of little tiny cement blocks, and you can take the top off, you can put stuff in it. Kind of may not sound that great as I describe it, but it was really neat, and they're really heavy because they're actually made out of concrete. So it was really a neat award that those people got. So anyway, without further ado, that pretty much describes the race. Like I said, it went through Davenport, Iowa, and Bettendorf, Iowa. So just to explain the area, the area is called the Quad Cities, this general area. And the Quad Cities includes Bettendorf and Davenport, Iowa. Davenport's the biggest city. That's where I grew up. So Davenport and Bettendorf, Iowa. And then across the Mississippi River is Rock Island and Moline, Illinois. So it's actually two different states, but these are the four main towns there, and they're all collectively called the Quad Cities. So you'll hear people say, or might hear me say, hey, did you grow up in the Quad Cities or anything like that? And that's what we mean, one of those four towns. And it does have, it is a pretty good little identity there. I mean, people do feel connected, I think, when as someone growing up in Davenport, I do feel connected to Rock Island and Moline, Illinois, for example, because we all think of ourselves as part of the Quad Cities, even though we're in two states separated by the Mississippi River. It's an interesting little spot. The Mississippi River actually flows east and west there instead of north and south. So to me, the Mississippi River was south of my house, which is very odd. Normally, the Mississippi River is going to be either east or west of where you live, but not to me. It was south. If I was walking toward the Mississippi River, I was walking south because the Mississippi River bends right there. So again, the race started in Davenport and went all the way into Bettendorf and then finished back in Davenport. So let's get to some interviews about the race, because I'm flubbing this all over the place. Let's get some interviews about the race. The first two is with the race directors. Then I interview three ladies who finished the race. And then I interview four guys. So I'm going to do these three interviews one after the other. The two race directors, the three ladies, the four guys. And let's listen up and see what they have to say. Okay, I'm here with Joshua Sun and Ryan Ames, okay. So just a little background first. Joshua, are you from the Quad Cities?
I am not from the Quad Cities originally. I'm actually from Dubuque, Iowa, but I've been living in the Quad Cities for almost 10 years now. So I consider it home now. I enjoy it here.
Okay, well, that's close enough. That's only about 30 miles. Ryan, what about you? Where are you from?
I am from the Quad Cities. I've lived here my whole life. So.
In Davenport?
Bettendorf and Davenport area.
All right, very good. So you're locals. Joshua, can you remember the first race you ran that was not like a K through 12 race, like the first running race that you did as an adult?
Well, I didn't run until I was an adult, so that's easy. did not run as a kid. Played a lot of video games. Yeah, definitely. It was called the State Street Mile in Rockford, Illinois. It was in 2008, summer. My friend enticed me to run it because you got a free ticket to Magic Waters, the water park. And he said we could run the race, get drunk, and then go to the water park the next morning. So I was hooked. It was a 1 mile, mostly downhill race, and it was terrible and awesome all at the same time. I almost died. I was almost second. I was almost last place in the entire thing. And then I started running a bunch.
So do you know what your time was in that race?
I do. It was, I believe, 8 minutes and 12 seconds. I want to say it was 8:12. And that was, like I said, it's mostly downhill. You kind of go downhill for a quarter mile, and it flattens out. And it's point to point. Like, you go down and down to State Street in Rockford. And yeah, they had heats though. To be fair, they had like a kids heat and they had, you know, masters heat. And then I was in like the open heat. So it was always people were warming up and warming up for 3 miles before a 1 mile race. I was freaked out. I was like, what's going on? Why are people running before they race? That makes no sense to me. And so I was in like the open heat. So it was all these former competitive collegiate runners, high school runners. And so, yeah, I was the second to last male and fifth to last overall. And I screamed out last finishing. And it was a really great moment in my life.
So quite a prestigious start there.
Yeah.
Okay. Ryan, what about you? Do you remember what your first race was out of doing like K through 12?
Yeah. Like Josh, I just started running 4 or 5 years ago. And at first, I actually absolutely hated it for the first 2 years, and then something clicked, and then I really started loving it. I got talked into – wasn't my first race, but the reason I started running was I got talked into running the Bix by my sister. So I'm getting ready for that. I ran a few before that. I think the first one I ran was a little one up in Lost Nation, Iowa, called the Rustic Run. It was they had a one-mile option, but I did not run a one-mile race. I went with a four-mile option. It was a fun race. I mean, it was – you know, no chip timing. They still use the old, they tear the tags off your bib. And they still did that last year, just the bib tags. And the 4 mile one, I think I did like 38 or 39 minutes in it and felt like I was going to die the whole time.
That's how fat kids feel when they start running.
Yeah.
Well, you both survived, I guess. So you brought up the Bix, and that was going to be my next question. How many times have you run the Bix, Joshua?
6 years. Since I started running, I missed it once because I did Ragbri, which is the only time I've ever done Ragbri, and then I missed it a second time because I was out of town for a friend's wedding.
Okay, Ryan, what about you? Have you done the Bix yet?
Yes, I've done it 4 times now. So,
and yes, before he says it, Ryan has a faster Bix time than me.
So, Joshua, besides this race, the 100Ks of convenience, you do the Sunderbrook bacon and barbecue or what? Bacon and beer.
Bacon and beer. B&B, Sunderbrook B&B trail races. That's a race here in Davenport, not too far from where we're at right now. That is a 5K-ish and a 10K-ish trail run. That's in May. And then Ryan's actually, this is his first year as assistant race director for that race. That's going to be in its fourth year in May. And then I also do the Shoots in 9 Hour trail endurance run, which is actually here. It's a trail race. It's not like this one, which is more of an urban road race. But the start finish is the same, and it's a short loop that you run for 9 hours, and it's brutal, and it is masochistic, and it's wonderful to not run it for 9 hours, but to watch people run it for 9 hours. This guy, Ryan, he has ran it, I think, more than anyone else, because we do that, and then we also do a fun run version of it sort of in December called Sex at Schutzen, because it's 6 hours. And so this guy's ran a lot of loops there. And then I also won the co-race directors from the Mines of Spain trail races in Dubuque, Iowa, where I'm originally from. And that's the first race I ever did. And that's actually – this will be our fifth year in August. We actually just sold out in 3 hours today. We opened registration at noon, and it was filled up by 3 p.m. So it's become pretty successful, which is really flattering. It's kind of crazy to think. People love it, and it's gone well. I know, Tim, you've ran the Mines of Spain before, and I remember I think you were there the first year, if I'm not mistaken. That was a good time. And, I got a lot of things on my plate, but I enjoyed doing it. So,
yeah, I did. I ran the first Mines of Spain up in Dubuque. That was great. And I think I ran the first Sunderbrook, too. I did run that. I think I ran the first one. I showed up literally 2 or 3 minutes before the start. Because I had run a race just before that. It's a long story, but I did a 5K at like 8, and then I did a year race at 9 or something.
That sounds about right.
It was very strange. So your races you have funny names, and now this race here is a completely unique idea. I haven't quite heard of this idea, especially with the stopping at the convenience stores. So who's coming up with these ideas and these names? Is this you, Joshua, or who's coming up with all these creative ideas?
I can't claim credit for it. Ryan, you speak to it.
This actually, we kind of got this idea from a running group out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. We met them at a race last year, talking to them for a while. Super cool people. And they had something similar to this, kind of. We changed it around a little bit to adopt it for what aspects that we liked and wanted to do to kind of create this. And then we decided, like, what, three, four, well, last, like, 6 months, we kind of started kicking around the idea a little bit. And, like, three or four months ago, we kind of decided to pull the trigger and say, let's do it. And
yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a gamble. I mean, we didn't, you know, the date that worked the best was this weekend, and it was a little sooner than we probably would have liked, but it was kind of the only weekend that was going to work. And, yeah, I mean, we took elements of them. I mean, they, you know, they kind of use convenience stores to some degree. They do a bigger – it's a kind of a whole different feel, different vibe, different distances. So we kind of modified it to what, you know, our the general idea was there, and then we just kind of took and expanded on that and made it fit for what would work in the Quad Cities. You know, there's kind of different things that we're introducing that I definitely think, you know, are different. But, yeah, we can't take – yeah, can't take credit for the original idea, not at all. But hoping, I think, you know, one of the things that I've always, you know, even though people think of us as purely a trail group, the Quad City Trail and Ultra Runners, you know, we're in the Quad Cities, we're in the Midwest. I mean, a part of that is running on the roads, you know, exploring your urban environment. We have an awesome, awesome urban trail system. That means pavement, you know, in the Quad Cities, four cities, you know, two states. Bridges you can run across, you know, Mississippi River right there. So there's a lot of nice area that I think people – and then there's also the spots that people just stick to, and they take it for granted how much other space is out there that is great to run on. And so that's kind of where we were like at with it. We're like, oh, this idea is cool. And then we can really highlight, you know, these areas that we know or other, you know, and do like a whole different loop through town that people might never go. I mean, they might run by there for the last 10 years, but never actually take these roads, this route. And we're on some of the main routes, of course, for connective purposes. But, you know, we try to make it as unique as possible and then obviously connect the different convenience stores, too, to make it feasible. So, I mean, it's. We don't know what to expect. That's what's fun about stuff like this. We don't know. People might hate it, you know. People might love it. It might happen next year if people do love it, if they all hate it. And we'll just drink a bunch of beer, and it'll be a one-time-only event, you know.
All the runners will have our phone numbers, so we might get a lot of hate calls.
Yeah, a bunch of hate texts and prank calls, a bunch of pizzas ordered, you know, delivered to us.
Yeah, so we might end up knowing how much they hate it before they even get back.
So, I mean, our number one concern is safety. If everyone stays safe, that's the most important thing. We would prefer to have people enjoy it and actually want to do it a second year. But, you know, most importantly is that people don't get hit by cars. But I'm excited. We've got, you know, we've got enough people to make it interesting for the ultra distances, the 40 mile and the 100K. And obviously we expected a lot more people doing the 20 miler because it's kind of, you know, easier, more accessible, and a lot of people didn't know exactly, or they're new. We had just the one girl that was here. It's her first time running that far. She's never ran 20 miles, and she's going to do it at our dumb little event. So, I mean, that's cool, you know.
Well, very good. I actually put a race on for 1 year. It was in Iowa City on New Year's Eve. No, only it was New Year's Day, and a total of four people ran it. It's called the Three Rings Run, anyway. And it went for 1 year, but we did have a male and female winner at least. Just a little bit about your race. Did I see you just did a 100-miler Orcas? What date was that?
That was 2 weeks ago today. So that was the 24th of February on Orcas Island, which is about an hour and a half north of Washington. I'm sorry, north of Seattle, not Washington, north of Seattle.
Yeah. Right. So somehow I didn't know you were actually going to that. So I think some big time runners were there. How'd that race go for you?
It went well. It was fun. It was absolutely beautiful. It was very difficult. It's a 25-mile loop. And so the San Juan Islands, the biggest island there is Orcas Island. And it's pretty much – you got the coast, and then it's all up and down, mountains pretty much in the center of the island. It was fun. I had a good time. I ran a friend from here, went out and did it. It was his second 100. He just did his first in November. And we went out together along with Ryan here and my wife, and they crewed and helped out. And my friend Adam and I, we pretty much ran the whole thing together from start to finish, which was a lot of fun, made it a lot more enjoyable. There's no pacers allowed, so, you know, it was you're out there pretty much on your own if you don't have someone you're running with. You know, big climbs that last forever, then just constant downhills, uphills. But, yeah, it was gorgeous. I mean, just the type of scenery you have there is just incredible. So.
What was your time and what was the cutoff time?
Adam and I, we finished in 34:10. The cutoff for the race is 36 hours. There was, to put in, yeah, the winner is a well-known runner, Nicodemus Holland. He's super well-known. He kind of came out a few weeks or maybe a month before signed up, and he came out with his fiance, and I think she got like third place, I want to say. But yeah, he crushed. I mean, he did really well. He ran in like a little over 20 hours. But you know, the average time there's a big gap there. The average time is about 30 hours. So, I mean, it's a difficult course, you know, it's not a fast course, relatively small field, not calling myself experienced, but you know, it's a pretty experienced field. So, I mean, the finish rate was actually pretty high compared to races that might have a lot more people in it. Cause most of the people, you know, are pretty knowledgeable and, you know, tough ultra runners, I guess. But yeah, I mean, we at a certain point, we had a nice big cushion. We wanted to stick together. We got a little separated there after the third loop around mile 75. And then we decided, you know, push out, do the last loop together. And, yeah, we're like, we could try to run harder. Nah, like we're going to finish this and we've got a couple hours to spare. So let's just have fun, you know? And, yeah.
Was the course itself in good shape and was the weather okay?
Yeah, the weather was actually pretty solid. I mean, compared to the year before, the first year for the race, they had a lot more rain and there's a lot more standing water on the course. There was about 2 to 3 inches of snow anywhere above like 1800 feet. So about 30, 35 miles of the race probably was ran on snow, like packed snow. So that was, you know, its own challenge. The weather itself was pretty, there wasn't a lot of precipitation, so it wasn't thankfully raining or snowing on us much, a little bit at the start. And the temperature just varied between the 20s and 30s. So, I mean, it was kind of a weird temperature because you're right in between sweating with too much clothes on and freezing and, you know, hypothermia with too little clothes on. So that was actually a really big challenge, was kind of finding that sweet spot in between there, you know, and managing to stay warm enough to keep moving. So.
Yeah, now that you mention it, Nicodemus Holland was just on a podcast and he talked about the race. So that guy is a freak. He's just a kid too. He's like 25 or something. But okay, so last question, because I think we have people wanting to get their packets. Last question: what's next for you guys? You have any major races in coming up for you guys that you've signed up for or thinking about? Joshua, Ryan, what do you got?
Next thing for me coming up, I'm running the 50K out of Ice Age. It's in 2 months, I think. I don't know. I don't know where it's even at. I just know I signed up. So it's actually going to be. I've run 50K a few times, especially like doing the shoots in 9 hour, but this will be actually my first official 50K distance versus hitting 50K in timed events. So it'll be a fun one for me. Other than that, this year is, we're both doing Relay Iowa again, which is a really great time, you know, running across the team, Iowa with a whole team. And other than that, that's all I have on the books this year.
Joshua, what about you?
Next big thing, I'm doing a rim-to-rim-to-rim at the Grand Canyon with some friends, so I'm pretty excited about that, yeah. And then Relay Iowa with this guy and a bunch of other great guys. And a few other races in between there. Then I am signed up. My big fall race is the Bear 100 out in Utah, so that I'm scared of. That was a very impulsive decision. A good friend of mine, one of my best friends back in the day, who now lives in Colorado, so he has a huge advantage. But he's running it, and then I was like, yeah, sure, why not? So, yep, that's pretty much it. Much other stuff scattered in there, but yeah, those are the big ones.
Well, that's a pretty good schedule. The Ice Age, I've been on that trail. I've done a race there. That'll be fantastic. It's beautiful, and rim to rim to rim, I'm jealous. That's definitely on my bucket list. So, anyway, thank you guys very much for talking to me.
Hey, thanks, Tim.
Okay, here we go. I am with two 20-mile finishers and one 40-mile finisher. Your name is?
Julie Tyler.
Julie Tyler, 20-mile finisher, and another 20-mile finisher?
Jill Riedemann.
And a 40-mile finisher?
Wendy Foote.
Wendy Foote. I definitely know Wendy because you've done my race. Did you do my race, too? That's why you have the hat on. Okay, so makes sense.
He stole it.
Okay, so... First question is, are you guys, where is your actual home right now?
Cedar Falls.
Cedar Falls, that's
Julie.
Julie's in Cedar Falls. Wendy is in?
Waterloo,
and?
Jill.
Jill is in?
Waterloo.
So you guys are not really native to this, so you actually had to kind of pay attention to the maps, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm lucky I'm from here, so I did have some advantage with all that. Did you like the format and how it was done? Julie, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just something different, coming to this town and not having a clue where we were going. But just the map was a distraction. So it was kind of made it go by fast.
Yeah, that was good. What did you think?
Yes, I agree. Very much fun, different route, something new. Took your mind off things, watching the map, looking where you go, different scenery. So enjoyed it a lot.
Wendy, what did you think about, I know you're a trail runner, right? What did you think about 40 miles of concrete?
You know, wintertime, you have to do it anyway a lot. So, you know, this was an opportunity for us to get out of our normal winter routes that we're so tired of by this time of the year. So it was good, you know, just to be able to look at different things. Again, the map was very, it was neat because you were distracted by it. You know, you had to pay attention. And I liked the aid station format, you know, going in and having to buy something. I thought that was a really neat concept.
Yeah, it was fun. The concrete kind of beat me up. I'm not quite used to it so much anymore. Have any of you ever run the Bix? No, oh, that's a crime. You all have to come run the Bix. That's the Quad Cities great race. Oh, here's a question. Since you all you ran pretty long on roads, what shoes did you wear, Julie?
Brooks Adrenaline today.
I have Brooks Adrenaline. That was my original marathon shoe, was the Brooks Adrenaline. And Jill, what shoes did you wear?
I had Brooks Glycerin.
I have Glycerins as well. And Wendy, what did you wear?
I wore the Nike Pegasus, and that's the first time I've worn them for that distance. And they did well.
Are they highly cushioned, lowly cushioned, medium?
Probably medium cushioned.
Yeah. Medium, yeah. I've heard of them, but I don't know those shoes. Okay, one last question. Do you guys have a particular big race or something interesting coming up in the future?
I'm kind of just training for the Chippewa Falls 50K.
Oh, is that in Wisconsin?
Yep, at the end of April.
I have heard of that. I haven't done that. And Jill?
I'm going to do Zumbro and just the 17, and then also Chippewa Falls as well.
I have done Zumbro. I did the 50 mile. It was pretty awesome. Yeah, you start at midnight. Actually, it was my very first DNF was Zumbro. So, but I did make it the second year. But Wendy, what do you have coming up?
Zumbro 2 with the 17, and then Chippewa 50K and Ice Age 50 mile.
Very good. I've done the Ice Age 50 mile. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I like that course.
All right. Well, thank you all for talking to me.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
Okay, I'm with some finishers of 20 miles and 40 miles. We'll kind of go around the horn here. Give your name and where you're from.
Alex Tim, Moline, Illinois.
Mad Dog Dylan, Kelowna, Illinois.
Mitch Elliott, Davenport, Iowa.
Jason Willits, Bettendorf, Iowa.
Okay, so you're all from the Quad Cities area along with me. I'm guessing the way this race is, it's kind of an excuse to get a long training run. Is that kind of all most of you looked at it?
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat training. Yeah, I wouldn't say I raced it hard, but it just looked fun. Josh and his gang are always good at setting up fun races, so it's like, oh, we want to support that, keep it going. So come out, beat ourselves up a little, and enjoy, you know?
Yeah.
Did anyone not know the area enough that you really had to rely on the map?
I don't know this area at all, so I was just completely useless out there. Thank God I was with my friend Rachel from the area, and so she knew where we were going. I was just blindly following.
and how did that turn out with Rachel leading?
We got a little lost. But we made it back. We took the scenic route.
Yeah, very good.
The steps were really clear. Like, it was real easy to follow.
Yeah, the map, they did a really good job with the logistics and the map and
of course,
turn-by-turn directions. It was,
of course,
it was easy to follow.
The second time through, even easier than
that. All right.
Five. No issues.
Yeah.
Other than Stonehaven, the imaginary road.
Yeah. No, that is funny. That is the only road I missed, but I did see it.
Yeah.
Well, I saw it coming out.
Yeah, exactly. But I've never saw the entrance to it. Is it by the school?
Well, is it the one where we had to go in between the two houses? No, like there was a sidewalk cut in between two houses and led out onto Stonehaven. It was like you had to go through the park.
And there was this. Oh, okay, yeah. So, yeah, we didn't. Yeah.
Wait a minute. It's the one guy who didn't know what was going on who somehow did find the one road the rest of us did not find.
Yeah.
Not sure how that works.
Worked out.
We just ran up to Crow Creek.
Yeah.
Okay, I always like to ask gear questions. This is a lot of road running on concrete. So, what shoes did you wear?
Asics.
Just ASICs at a particular
I don't
time?
I know specifically. They're just ASICs.
Did you get them from JCPenney or something?
I got them from Dick's Sporting Goods.
Same thing, basically. Yeah. What are you running?
So I did the first loop in some New Balance. I forget the model number, road running shoes.
Also got them at Dick's.
Yeah. No, I got them online, running warehouse. And then I have some Hoka trail ones. Again, I'm bad with names. I forgot.
A little more cushion for the second.
I think the Clifton, maybe?
You know, one of those.
Know. Yeah, something like that.
Okay, you're kind of a big guy. Looks like you could use some cushioning. So, what did you wear?
Blue ones.
Blue shoes? That's very nice.
They're New Balance. I can't remember. I've had them for a long time, and they got stored away. But, no, I mean, they were good cushion.
So you three don't seem super particular about shoes yet here. It's kind of whatever was in your closet. Jason, what about you? Are you a little more particular?
I ran in the Nike Free Run Distance. It's a road shoe.
What about how'd you guys carry liquids?
I didn't carry any liquids. I bought water bottles at the gas stations and just kind of chugged them. And that kept me until the next gas station.
What about you?
I had my good old reliable Nathan hand bottle. Very nice. 16 ounces. Yeah.
And I have a Nathan, a belt with two bottles on the back.
Oh, do you have a belt? You know, me and you are probably the only two people still wearing a belt. Yeah, I have a Camelback.
I don't like the shoulder.
Little belt thing. They're kind of rare. So. Yeah. What about you, Jason?
I wore a Salomon hydration pack with two soft flasks.
Yeah. One more question. Who has run the Bix?
Oh.
Oh, okay. Everyone, so how many times have you run it?
I think just two.
Two? And how about you?
Dos?
Three times.
Three?
Yeah, two or three times.
Two or three times. I have to ask that because that's the great race of the Quad Cities. Yeah. So, last question. Do you have anything on your calendar coming up that's kind of an interesting race or a big deal race or anything like that?
I got my first 50K March 25th, Paleozoic 50K. It's Palos Park. It's like right outside Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Okay. What about you?
Next one of any significance is probably Ice Age, so up in Wisconsin.
50K or 50 mile?
50 mile.
I've done that. It's a fantastic race.
That's, everyone tells me that, so I'm looking forward to it.
Anything on your agenda?
I have the Earth Day 50K and then Ice Age 50 mile too.
Nice. I did the very first Earth Day, I think. That's a great race also. How about you, Jason?
So I'm also doing the 50K at Paleo, and then I'm actually doing a rim-to-rim-to-rim of the Grand Canyon.
Are you doing it with Joshua? Yeah, he mentioned that. I'm really jealous.
I've never been to the Grand Canyon, and I've never been to Vegas either, so I'm looking forward to both of those. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I trip him when he runs by.
Congratulations, guys, and thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Okay, there you go with the interviews. So to kind of follow up on that, a few things that you heard. First of all, the rim to rim to rim, Joshua and Jason both said they were going to do the rim to rim to rim. That is where you go to the Grand Canyon and you start on one edge of the Grand Canyon, you run, and that's the rim, and then you run all the way down into the Grand Canyon, up to the other side, to the other rim. That would be a rim to rim. And a rim to rim to rim means you finish where you started. So you start at the south side, you run to the north side, and then you run from the north side to the south side. It is a very difficult thing to do, and you can't do a formal race there, so people just often go and do it on their own. And it definitely is something I would like to do someday. It'd be really great. And by the way, I didn't get any 100K finishers interviewed because I left before they finished, just in case you're wondering. Let's see what else. Bix and Ragbri. You heard me talk about Bix a lot. So the Bix 7-mile race is a race in the Quad Cities. It's in Davenport. And I don't want to talk too much about it because I really should run it sometime and then, you know, make a whole episode about it and interview some people. But it's a pretty famous race. It's been going for like 40 years. And they have prize money, so they get famous people coming. The Kenyans come, and people like Meb Keflezighi and Ryan Hall have run it, people like that. And the other interesting thing is Bill Rogers and Joan Benoit Samuelson have run it for like 30 or 40 years straight. They have basically a standing invitation to keep coming. So I've gotten clothes, you know, hats signed by them and met them, and my picture taken with them because they always do a little pre-race meet and greet before the race. So it's a very famous race in the Quad Cities, very hilly, extremely hilly race. So again, I'll talk more about Bix in a future at some future time. But as you can see, a lot of the runners have done the Bix. Ragbri, Joshua mentioned Ragbri. That's one reason he missed the Bix. That's a bike ride that goes all across the state of Iowa. Also a very famous bike ride, one of the very first touring rides. This is where you're not racing, but you're just biking. And it goes from town to town to town, and you camp overnight, and it takes a whole week to do. And it's also very famous. So I should do a show about that sometime as well. So you heard about some of the other races that Josh puts on. So I wanted to go over those a little bit. He puts on the Schutzen 9-hour endurance run. And this race, the 100Ks of Convenience, actually started at Schutzen Park. Okay, that's where we started this race. So the Schutzen 9 hours at the same spot. So it's called Schutzen Park, and it's 9 hour, but he spells it N-E-I-N, and then he puts an exclamation point in, which cracks me up, because then you always want to say Schutzen 9. You can't help but say 9, Schutzen 9 hour endurance run. Okay, that's on June 17th, so you can still sign up for that. And it's a 0.85 mile loop, a very short loop, but it's nothing but a hill, basically. So it's 125 to 150 feet of elevation gain and loss for every single loop, which means if you were to run a marathon's worth, it'd be about over 4,000 feet of up and down in a marathon. That is really hilly. That's why he said it was grueling to do. And you run it for 9 hours just to see how far you can go. Whoever goes the farthest wins. So that is the Schutzen 9-hour endurance race. And in case you're wondering about Schutzen, I should preface this, a little background here. I should preface this by noting that Davenport, Iowa was settled by a lot of German immigrants in the 1800s, so late 1800s. And so Schutzen Park was, that means shooting park. It was a place to come, they had target practice and stuff like this. So a little background on that. In 1870, Schutzen Park, or the shooting park, was built. It was a target range for rifle marksmanship. In addition to the shooting and target houses, the park included an inn, a dance hall, a music pavilion, a zoo, bowling alleys, a roller coaster, refreshment stands, athletic fields, picnic grounds, and other amusements. As many as 12,000 people visited the park in a single day for major events. And I should note, this is all gone now. There's nothing of this left except a few little, you know, remnants of structures. Kind of sad that it's all gone. A little more. In 1885, Theodore Janssen wrote of the park, "In the charming area of Black Hawk lies the magnificent Schutzen Park with its spacious shooting gallery and 20-gun stands. You cannot feel better anywhere than you do in the fresh, woods-scented, and shady lap of Mother Nature, with the jolly crack of rifles, the deep rumble of bowling balls, the endearing charm of the mighty German men's chorus, the intoxicating sounds of the superb German music, added to which is the happy sound of our dear mother tongue falling on our ear almost everywhere. You believe that you have been transported back to the dear old German motherland and forget entirely that you are separated from it by a trivial 5,000 miles. Unfortunately, the popularity of Schutzen Park began to decline around 1917. Can you guess why? Yes, the anti-German hysteria from World War I restricted the activities of German Americans and led to the prohibition of the use of the German language in public. Many businesses and organizations changed their German names. For a time, Schutzen Park was renamed Forest Park. The Davenport Schutzen Verein became known by its English equivalent, the Davenport Shooting Association. So my own little take on this. So as you can see, when we tend to vilify innocent people in America for what's happening in their ancestral lands, that is something Americans have been doing for a long, long, long time. And it continues to happen. So even way back then, we were doing it to people. So finally, the park was dealt another serious blow in 1919 when Prohibition outlawed the manufacture and sale of alcoholic beverages, which had been a major source of revenue for the park. The park was sold in 1923, and it became the site of the Chiropractic Psychopathic Sanitarium. I should look up that. Anyway, the Davenport Shooting Association continued to use the park for many years after the 1923 sale. In 1960, much of the property again changed hands to the Davenport Good Samaritan Center. So there you go, a little background on that. By the way, Josh mentioned the QCTUR, the Quad City Trail and Ultra Runners. So it's a little club there, a group, and they put on a lot of these races, or they run together, do a lot of group runs, and they've also helped maintain some of the trails here in Schuetzen Park. Josh also mentioned the Sex at Schuetzen. Again, another little funny thing, sex being the German word for six. So it's a six-hour version of the race, the same race, but only for 6 hours. Done in, he did it last December, and I don't see anything up for next December. So you might look for that. The Sunderbrook B&B, that's the race we talked about, not too far from Schuetzen Park, and it's all on bike trails. Really nice bike trail park. It's a 5K, 10K. That's on May 20th, and you can still sign up for that. So check that out. Sunderbrook B&B. Fun race. You have beer and bacon at the end. And then the Mines of Spain race, he mentioned that was his first race he put on. That's up in Dubuque. Dubuque is extremely hilly. Don't think Iowa's not hilly. At some places it is. It doesn't have mountains, but it can have very sharp up and downs. And so the Mines of Spain race is a very hilly race up in Dubuque, Iowa. They have a half marathon, 7 mile and 4 mile. I did the original half marathon. Very great workout. Unfortunately, it sold out, like he said, in 3 hours. That's in August. So keep your eye out for that in the future. And also, we mentioned Nicodemus Holland. And I said that he was the guy who won the Orcas 100-mile race. And I said I had heard him on a podcast. Where I heard him was on episode 155 of the Ginger Runner Live podcast. So check that out. Also, I guess that he was 25 years old. He's 26. But he's amazing for a 26-year-old. He really, really can run. Okay, I think that's it for 100 Ks of Convenience. I hope I didn't muddle everything too much there, but hopefully I gave you some interesting insights into that race and some of the other races they put on and about the Quad City area there. So let's move on to our next segment. This is the general education segment. And this was, again, supposed to be the St. Patrick's Day special. And everyone thinks about St. Patrick. He's one of the patron saints of Ireland. But did you know there are two other patron saints? Now, Irish people probably know all about this, I guess, but I didn't know. So there are two other patron saints, Brigid and Columba. Now, Brigid might also be called Bridget, probably where Bridget came from, or the two names are related. But there's Brigid and Columba. Columba was born December 7th. That's my birthday, by the way, if you want to send presents. December 7th, 521, and was an Irish abbot and missionary who spread Christianity in Scotland. He's not very interesting to me. Although Iona College, which is a small Catholic liberal arts college in New Rochelle, New York, is named after the island on which Columba established his first monastery in Scotland. There you go. So if you're at Iona College, there's a connection between him and St. Columba. Now, St. Brigid of Kildare is a little more interesting to me, so I've got some background on her. She lived from 451 to 525, just barely overlapping with Columba. She was an early Irish Christian nun, abbess, and foundress of several monasteries of nuns. What's interesting is some scholars suggest she never lived, but was just a Christianization of the Celtic goddess Brigid. By the way, I looked up, should we say Celtic or Celtic? And it sounds like you can go either way. And actually, Celtic was, in a sense, the older way, but now it's becoming kind of cool to say Celtic. But I'm going to stick with Celtic in this case. So I got some information from a website called the goddessgift.com. Brigid, and now this is talking about the goddess, the Celtic goddess, okay, not the saint Brigid. Brigid, the Celtic goddess of fire, poetry, healing, childbirth, and unity, is celebrated in many European countries. She is known by many names, including that of Saint Brigid, who is perhaps the most powerful religious figure in Irish history. Born at the moment of daybreak, Brigid rose into the sky with the sun, rays of fire beaming from her head. She was the daughter of Dagda, the great father god of Ireland. In Druid mythology, the infant goddess, Brigid, was fed with milk from a sacred cow from the other world. Bridget owned an apple orchard in the other world, and her bees would bring their magical nectar back to Earth. It is said that wherever she walked, small flowers and shamrocks would appear. As a sun goddess, her gifts are knowledge, inspiration, and the vital and healing energy of the sun. She married Brez, an Irish king from a warring tribe. She hoped this would bring peace, but a battle ensued and one of their sons died. She lamented so loudly and it was so heartrending that both sides stopped fighting to forge a peace. Wait a minute, did I say lamentations? Did I just say lamentations?
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women. That is good.
Ah, there you go. Anyway, one of the most popular tales of the goddess Bridget involved two lepers who appeared to her sick, who appeared at her sacred well at Kildare and asked to be healed. She told them that they would bathe each other until the skin healed. After the first one was healed, he felt only revulsion for the other and would not touch him to bathe him. Angered, Bridget caused his leprosy to return. Then she gently placed her mantle around the other leper, who was immediately healed. Thus, Ireland is full of springs and wells named after the goddess Bridget. Symbolically, water is seen as a portal to the other world and as a source of wisdom and healing. There is a saying that Bridget rewards any offering to her, so offerings of coins were often tossed into her wells, the forerunner of the modern custom of throwing a penny into a fountain while you make a wish. At her most famous shrine, Bridget taught humans how to gather and to use herbs for their healing properties, how to care for their livestock, and how to forge iron into tools. As a goddess of childbirth and protector of all children, she is the patroness of midwifery. So here's a little bit more about Saint Bridget. Bridget was a gentle and loving woman whose gifts of healing and compassion were evident even when she was a child. Her touch would heal the sick and her blessing bring food and warmth to the poor. Her compassionate nature and strong will eventually led her into religious vocation. Some versions of her legends tell that her parents sent her to the nunnery because they could no longer afford her incredible generosity. Giving her father's jewel-encrusted sword to a poor leper was simply the last straw. Others say it was her persistent refusal of all marriage proposals. Bridget's influence in the church grew steadily, and soon she was given permission to form a convent of her own. She asked for land on which to build, and the local king was greatly amused at the audacity of a woman to make such a request. Mockingly, he responded that yes, she was welcome to take as much land as she could encircle with her cloak. Thanking him, the clever Bridget unraveled the yarn in her cloak and with it staked out the ample boundaries of her new site. Legends arose that she was at the midwife of the birth of Jesus. This makes no sense to me whatsoever. I don't understand this part. Baptizing the infant with 3 drops of water from her holy well, weaving his swaddling clothes from the wool of her ewes, and leading the Holy Family to Egypt when she foresaw the slaughter of the innocents. One of St. Bridget's titles became the foster mother of Jesus. If she was born in 451, I don't really understand how that works out. But anyway, in some respects, St. Bridget can be compared to the Greek goddess Artemis. Like Artemis, she refused to marry, choosing instead to exercise her own authority in a community of female followers who were themselves forbidden to marry while in her service. Men, including her own bishops, were not allowed to enter the abbey. Also like Artemis, Bridget was a goddess of childbirth, a protector of children, and a fierce advocate of women's rights. Under the authority of Bridget, the increasing power of the patriarchy was limited. Saint Bridget ensured that women were allowed to hold property in their own names, that the crime of rape was unpardonable, and that the rights of children born to unwed mothers were preserved. That sounds rather modern, doesn't it? She died of natural causes in 525. Her body was initially kept to the right of the high altar of Kildare Cathedral, with a tomb adorned with gems and precious stones and the crowns of gold and silver. But in 878, during the Scandinavian raids, her relics were moved to the tomb of Patrick and Columba, Today, St. Bridget's skull can be found in the Church of St. John the Baptist in Lumiar, Portugal. There you go. Way more than you ever wanted to know about Bridget, right? So finally, see how many minutes are we into this? Oh, we're an hour into this, so let's get ready to wrap it up. In our Not This Day in History segment, I'm going to talk about David Armbruster. He's the guy who helped invent the butterfly stroke, and he did it at the University of Iowa, speaking of my home area. That's where I graduated from college, was the University of Iowa, and I found out about this on a radio show called the River to River Show on Iowa Public Radio. So David Armbruster was a very famous coach, a swim coach. He coached for 40 years at the University of Iowa, and he was the head of University of Iowa swimming in the 1930s. He was looking for a way to make the breaststroke faster. There were only three strokes at the time, the freestyle, backstroke, and breaststroke. Those are the only three strokes. He was trying to make the breaststroke faster. So he modified the arm movement so that swimmers would pull their arms forward above the water instead of below it. This was in 1933 to 1935. So that's this Not This Day in History. That's when this happened. Until then, there were, like I said, only three strokes. And the rules were a lot different then. You could swim underwater the whole way, for example. You can't do that now. That was changed in 1988. It was actually faster to be underwater the whole way. And a lot of rules have evolved over time. So it was Armbruster and one of his swimmers, Jack Sieg. They developed the stroke by taking the breaststroke and doing the arm recovery above the water. And they developed the dolphin kick as well. There are some people who will say earlier versions of this butterfly stroke did exist, but these two get a lot of credit, I guess, for really developing it. Supposedly, someone tried this in the breaststroke to win the 1938 Olympics, and he was disqualified. So what was happening was people were doing the butterfly as their breaststroke. Okay, it was considered just a modification of the breaststroke, and it was rather controversial. For a number of years. It was in 1956, finally, that it became its own stroke. So that's when they actually added it and said, no, it's not. You know, the breaststroke and the butterfly are two completely different things. So in 1956, it became its own stroke. All right, that's all I have for today for the Not This Day in History. I did say in the last show that if you wanted to provide comments, you could do that. You could send me an email, or you could send in an audio comment, and I'll mention that again. But I did get an email, and this is kind of weird. I think it's an email from someone who's not an endurance runner. I don't know how he came across my podcast. So, and it sounds like what he was doing was he was listening to it and then typing comments, and then he emailed these comments to me. So I did reread this. I did read this already. So here's his comments, okay? I like the Bill Nye intro. Your voice is unusually high. I don't know why my voice is so high. It just is, evidently. Too much enunciation. Over-enunciation. I'm sorry. Sorry if I feel like I'm flubbing my words most of the time. Blah, blah, blah. He's saying I over-enunciate. The visual of you at the mic. Oh, so he was watching it on YouTube. So if you didn't know, you can watch this podcast on YouTube. It usually, there's a delay of a few days before I get it up on YouTube, so you can watch it. But anyway, the visual of you at the mic looks professional. Looks like an important office setting. I like the description of your weekly routine, but you cut it off to talk about some trail woman. That's when I was talking about Camille Heron, I think. Oh, the golden ticket. That's cool. Wow. 40, 50 miles of running in a weekend sounds really... He has a lot of cuss words in here. Sounds really bad, blank. Okay, so Camille Heron says she runs 40 to 50 miles each weekend. He thought that was really amazing. Weekend running long distance is a thing. I learned something. Toenails. So I talked about toenails last week. That's an interesting topic. Remove toenails, blank. Dude cut his toe off, blank. Bad, blank. So he got really excited about the whole toenail thing. By the way, I exaggerated something. I said last week that when you get black toenails, they fall off. Not always. Sometimes you just get a black spot. So I had mentioned I have five black toenails right now, they may or may not fall off. It kind of depends. But it's still annoying because it, even if it's a black spot, the whole toenail gets sensitive. It's annoying. Seven continent run. So I talked last week about Michael Wardian, who ran seven marathons on seven continents in 7 days. Seven continent run, $38,000 to enter. I guess I should be saying bleep. Running in Antarctica, bleep. What the bleep? What a crazy bleep sport. This is all what he was typing to me. Try looking at the camera occasionally. Hello, camera. I'm looking at it right now. Thin trail, double trail talk, roots, technical talk. You have a stupid voice. I guess I have a stupid voice. Bleep, only 21 minutes into this podcast. You said pain in quads. Downhill running is hard on quads. Learn something. You over-enunciate. The guy really doesn't like my voice. Joseph Ingram kicked your blank. That was in the race. I interviewed Joseph Ingram, who did beat me. Blank, blank, more shoe questions. Blank, blank, blank. You guys love blanking shoes. You mispronounced the capital of Ethiopia. So in my general education segment last week, I talked about Ethiopia, and I think he's referring to when I said Addis Ababa, okay? And I'm guessing he wanted me to say Addis Ababa. So I actually did some research on this, by the way, and it's interesting. If you go to YouTube, you can find a whole bunch of videos telling you how to pronounce things. So there's a whole bunch telling you how to pronounce this. I looked at six of them, okay? Of the six I looked at, three agreed with me. They said Addis Ababa. Two of them said Addis Ababa, and one said it in a way I couldn't really comprehend. So the majority actually agreed with me on how to say this, of the six I looked at. For me, Ethiopia was the most interesting blank bleep yet. Coffee beans, good bleep. Triathlon history, that's boring. You hit your stride with the Ethiopia stuff, close with less important stuff. I listened to it all, but I probably couldn't endure an hour of endurance talk. Anyway, that's an email, and that was from that was from Tommy Cigarette. Huh, that's a rather interesting name. But anyway, that's the email I got. Actually, I'm going to try to set up a phone number you can call in to leave a comment, but for now, you can just make an MP3 recording. If you can figure out how to do that, email me the MP3, and I will play it. So I did get one. Let's listen to it. Whoa, I'm going to cut that one off. I don't know what's going on there, so whatever. Okay, anyway, that's the end of the show. So like I said, I'm going to try to give you a call-in line so you can call in, maybe leave something more intelligent than whatever the heck that was. Like I said, but for now, you can send an MP3, and you can talk about anything you want. You can comment on something I've said in the show. Maybe you were in one of the races I did and want to give your own little thoughts on the race. You can advertise your own race. You can talk about your training. You can brag up a friend or brag up yourself or suggest a topic or tell me that my voice sounds stupid and too high or anything you want. All right. So keep that in mind. If you do call in, if I ever get that going, or you do send in an MP3, try to keep it within about 5 minutes or something so it doesn't get too long. I guess that's it for now for that. So thank you, for listening. I have no donors this week or this time, so no donors to thank. So again, go to my website at runsmith.net. You can find Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email. I haven't been announcing my email because I'm trying to get a new one that's dedicated to the show, but I will say it here. It's chemsmith1@gmail.com. ChemSmith, like the beginning of the word chemistry, C-H-E-M, ChemSmith1@gmail.com. If you want to send an email, like I said, I'm going to try to change that, although that will always work. And you can find my coaching services. Please check out my coaching services. So we will finish out by finishing the song from Techno Axe, the little Irish song. And this is Topics in Endurance Sports. Signing out, have a great workout.